morning, Your Honors. Mr. Hoffman. I may offer a minor correction, Your Honor. That's Mark Wilkinson versus Walls.
Sorry.
May I begin? Your Honors, this is the autopsy that was purportedly performed on Hilda Wilkinson. But this autopsy doesn't tell us how Hilda Wilkinson died, and it doesn't tell us that for two reasons. First, the determination of death is almost certainly not based on the physical examination of the decedent that's described in this autopsy.
But let me just start you right out, if I might, because I'm wondering why exactly Judge Lindbergh was required to conduct an evidentiary hearing. I mean, doesn't the record amply demonstrate that Mr. Wilkinson suffered no prejudice from his attorney's failure to pursue the inconsistency in the autopsy report? In other words, didn't he admit that he had strangled his wife?
When he took the stand, yes. And I believe he believed that he did. But whether he believed it or not is irrelevant if he didn't actually do it. And this autopsy, if it's not on Hilda Wilkinson or if it's fabricated, because we're not arguing that an autopsy was not performed on Hilda Wilkinson. We're simply arguing that this autopsy, as it's written up, does not describe her. This is not an autopsy of her. But since, under the facts of this case, she's in the process of chewing off his finger, we have a medical treatise that explains that there's approximately a 50-50 chance that she could have died of cardiac arrest from a part of his tissue coming in contact with his larynx or vocal cords. If she died of cardiac arrest, he didn't kill her. So I think the autopsy becomes tremendously important, and whether he believed it or not is irrelevant to whether he actually did it.
Can you give us the beginning of that argument again that you made, that he didn't believe that he may have believed it, but he didn't?
Well,
just give me that one sentence. I've never heard that one before.
I'll try to recall it. Right. Whether he believed that he killed her is irrelevant if he didn't actually do it.
Oh, all right.
I mean, he's not a doctor. Under the facts of that case, he did have three fingers of his free hand on her neck to try to cut off her wind so she would release his finger. She releases his finger. He stands up, sees her move, starts examining his finger to see the damage. He looks down again and sees that she's dead. I think it's logical to assume that he would believe that he caused that death, even though he said it was accidental and in self-defense.
Mr. Gibson, I have to tell you, I am very bothered by the loss of the record in this case. If we don't have the state court trial record, I'm not really certain how we can meaningfully review the district court's finding as the lack of prejudice. So what I wanted to ask you is this: is there any way that you think you and the state can supply us with copies of the state court trial transcript and whatever relevant records?
I didn't realize the record had been lost, Your Honor, but yes, I believe that is possible.
Do you have something else to say on it?
The district court informed this court that it had lost most of the record in this case.
It meaning which? The district court had lost it?
Yes.
Do either of you have copies of this court, of your part of this trial, of the transcript?
I didn't represent him at trial, but I've read the transcript. So
well,
I'm
could
assuming,
you get us that transcript?
I'm
then?
Assuming I have a copy somewhere. But if I could also state one thing.
Now let me ask counsel, do you have a copy of the government's?
I have some of the attachments to the plea, both post-conviction petition and things like that.
Do you have a copy of the transcript?
I don't know if I have a copy of the transcript.
Well, would you try to ascertain?
I will check.
And let the court know. Would you do the same?
Certainly, Your Honor.
All right, okay.
If I could, though, I don't believe that the trial is really relevant to the post-conviction petition, because the two key issues at trial were, did he intend to kill her, and was he acting in self-defense? obviously the jury found against him, or you might say at least seems to have found against him, but the post-conviction petition alleges ineffective assistance of counsel. That was not a trial issue. It was not a post-trial motion. It came up after the trial and says that his lawyer was ineffective for not discovering this autopsy, which leads to, at least according to Dr. Fiegel, a reasonable inference that this is not an autopsy of Hilda Wilkinson or it's fabricated. If that's true, then there was not any proof of a criminal cause of death. No matter what he intended, even no matter what he believed, if there's not a criminal cause of death, if she died of a heart attack, he should not have been convicted of
murder. Where did you get that idea from?
From Dr. Polson, or Dr. Polson and Knight and G in, I can't remember the name of the book, but it's cited in the brief.
I know, but where did you get it from the facts of this case? Is that your theory?
Oh, I didn't understand your question, Your Honor. That was from Dr. Fiegel down in Florida, the pathologist whose affidavit is included in one of the appendices.
Forgive me. I'm going back to the state trial court record. Is it your view that we can meaningfully review the district court's finding as to the lack of prejudice without having all of the relevant portions of the state trial court record?
I believe it is.
We can.
I believe you can. Because the issues are separate. The issues of whether or not he killed her is irrelevant to intent, and intent is irrelevant to that issue.
Okay.
I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal then, Your Honor.
All right, counsel.
May it please the court, counsel. I am Assistant Attorney General Jay Huffman. I represent the respondent warden in this case. Before I get into the facts of the Strickland argument and addressing some of the matters that counsel has already addressed, I want to note that there is a question regarding the standard of review in this case, and given what occurred when this case was before this court before, in which this case court found that under a Finley motion, the appellate court of Illinois should be judged to have addressed all the issues on the merits, I think it's important that this court address it in this case what exactly the standard of review is. Counsel claims that it should address the matter de novo because there are no specific findings in, as there never are, in a Finley grant. The court simply said, as this court noted, that it had made a careful review of the record and found that there were no issues of merit. Counsel contends, citing to a Fourth Circuit case and two district court cases, that this is insufficient to achieve the AEDPA deference standard. Respondent would contend that this is not so. At one point in his reply brief, petitioner indicates that after Williams v. Taylor, there's a question of whether there's any deference. I don't understand that reading of Williams v. Taylor. I think Williams v. Taylor is quite clear that there is a substantial amount of deference now. Williams v. Taylor at 120 Supreme Court 1523 says, in sum, 2254d1 places a new constraint on the power of a federal habeas court to grant a state's petitioner's application for a writ of habeas corpus with respect to claims adjudicated on the merits in state court, and goes on to indicate, as this court I'm sure is well familiar, just exactly what the standards are for those different matters. In other words, when the state court has addressed the matter on the merits, a habeas court owes it deference. And this court said in its decision in the first Wilkinson, 231 F3D 347 at page 351, twice in both columns, this court notes that Well, it says, when it chose to affirm outright the dismissal of Wilkinson's post-conviction petition, the appellate court rendered the merits judgment as to each of the claims raised in that petition. The fact that the court did not identify or discuss the ineffectiveness claim in its order is irrelevant. What matters is that Wilkinson made the claim in his post-conviction petition, that the appellate court undertook a, quote, careful review of the record on its own without soliciting merits briefing from Wilkinson. That's in the second column. This court said essentially the same thing in the first column. And with regard to that, counsel does cite to Bocian versus Godinez from this court, noting that this court has said that its review should take into account how careful the state court was. This court said twice that the state court in this case undertook a careful review of the record. With that regard, regardless of whether it is a de novo or a deferential standard, the people believe that the district court here was correct, that the ineffective assistance of counsel claim simply does not meet the two-prong standard of Strickland. The first prong, of course, being that you must show some that counsel's performance fell below an objective standard of reasonableness, and second of all, that there was prejudice to the extent that there's a reasonable probability that the outcome would have been different. I'm not going to go through all the facts, but as I indicated in my brief, at the time counsel looked at this, he realized that looking at the evidence, it was apparent that a jury would believe that the cause of death was the choking by defendant. And I want to thank counsel this morning for making that argument for me. Counsel said that it was logical for the defendant to assume that he had caused the death. If it was logical for defendant to assume that he had caused the death looking at that evidence, even before all this flight evidence and his stealing the plane and things like that and his chopping up the body, it was certainly logical, after all that additional evidence, for counsel to believe that that was the cause of the death. And so before, and the district court certainly did not get to this, it went simply to prejudice. But there is certainly no substandard performance here, given the facts of this case. And I would take issue with counsel's argument that if he did not cause the actual death in this case, if she died from a heart attack, then he is not guilty of murder. I disagree. In his original brief, counsel makes an analogy, something to the extent that if I intend to kill someone and I go in the backyard and come at them, but they're struck by lightning, well, I intended to do it, but I didn't kill them. Well, that's not the case here. What counsel forgets is that the agency was that of the defendant here. This is much more analogous to a case, say, for instance, I take a baseball bat and hit someone over the head intending to crush their skull. Instead, I snap their neck. I didn't do what I intended. Does it mean that I'm not guilty of murder? No. I try to hang someone, hoping to asphyxiate them. Instead, by some luck, I do it the proper way, drop them far enough, and snap their neck. Does it mean I'm not guilty of murder? No. I intended it. I brought about the agency, and I caused it. I intend to stab someone in the heart and stop that muscle. I miss, and the person bleeds to death. I'm still guilty of murder. It does not matter the exact cause of the death here. I will just go on briefly then to the second prong. As Your Honor indicated, I believe that the evidence here is quite clear that even if there was some substandard performance by counsel, there is no chance that there was prejudice to defendant. First of all, one must remember that the jury felt, in this case, that it was the agency, regardless of what the actual medical cause was, it was the agency of Mr. Wilkinson that caused the death. How do we know this? They rejected the self-defense claim. They rejected the unreasonable belief in self-defense claim, which would have gotten a second-degree murder conviction, and they rejected the involuntary murder claim, involuntary manslaughter, excuse me. It's quite obvious that they did not believe his statement about being bit first, that they did not believe that he was acting in response. And that's consistent with all the evidence, the fact that he asked people to help him kill his wife, that he made these plans, that he was carrying around the list of the plans in his trunk, that he was carrying around the plastic, that he cut off her legs. regardless of any error in the autopsy here, and any error by counsel not showing the autopsy or investigating further, there was simply no prejudice. If this court has no further questions, the respondent would ask that this court affirm the finding of the district judge, which denied the petition for habeas corpus.
Thank you, counsel.
Here the cause of death is, or shall we say the manner of death is very relevant. In People v. Brown, 373 Northeast 2nd, 459, the Illinois appellate court said that extensive medical testimony is not always necessary to show this causal relationship between death and an act of defendant. However, where the causative factors are less than obvious, when they are beyond a general public perception, particular expert medical testimony is essential to sustain the connection between criminal activity and death. Certainly here, we have two possible causes of death. One would appear to be quite obvious. The other would appear, as this court says, less than obvious. A good autopsy would tell us which was Hilda Wilkinson's cause of death. But a bad autopsy doesn't tell us that. And in that case, we simply don't know whether she died of a criminal cause. And absent that, we don't know whether or not he killed her. Certainly the state did not prove corpus delicti beyond a reasonable doubt. If there are no questions on that point, I'd like to respond to the deference argument. In terms of deference, any deference that may be required under the Habeas Corpus Act, 2254D1 talks about an adjudication by the state court. And according to Black's Law Dictionary, an adjudication implies a hearing by a court of the legal evidence on a factual issue. The state courts had no hearing, found no facts. Wilkinson's petition was simply dismissed. It was a one-liner. The appellate court did a one-liner, and the state Supreme Court did a one-liner. No facts were ever found. There are no factual findings to defer to. Second, under Williams v. Taylor, the correct procedure there is for the state court to identify the Supreme Court rule that it is using to adjudicate the federal claim. Here again, there was nothing said about Strickland or any other case being applied by the state court. We don't know whether the state court determined the claim under state law or federal law. It could have done either one. Do I have any time left?
Yeah, half a minute.
Thank you. But here again, the exact cause of death does matter, because I don't think we could say that Mark Wilkinson intended part of his finger to come in contact with his wife's vocal cords or larynx. And again, if that's how she died, he didn't kill her. She, in effect, caused her own death. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The court will take the case under advisement. Thank you, counsel. The court is adjourned. Lana, do you want some help?